Galaxy's Edge, opening May 31st at Disneyland Resort and August 29th at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Give Me Those Star Wars, the Star Wars show for the Fire & Water Podcast Network. I don't know what Ryan calls the show. Yes, of course, Ryan is normally your host, but I am your special guest host. This is Rob Kelly, and joining me to talk about Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, this is very exciting, he just got back, our pal, Corey Drew. Hi, Corey.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. This is really exciting because you talked to me, you texted me last week and said, hey, why don't we do a show about Galaxy's Edge? And I pulled the guys and I said, have any of you been to Galaxy's Edge? None of them had been, not even Chag, who lives in Florida. So you'll be providing all new information for everybody. So this is really, really cool. So Corey, let's just, before we talk about Galaxy's Edge specifically, just to get a baseline. Like, what is your thing on Walt Disney World and amusement parks in general? Like, do you like going there anyway and Star Wars is just like an added feature, or are you kind of going specifically to go to Galaxy's Edge?
So I went to Disney World in, oh gosh, many years ago, 10, 12 years ago or more. I went for 4 hours and I went to the Magic Kingdom and... with the exception of there's a ride based on Peter Pan and It's a Small World. With the exception of those two worlds or those two rides, I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand Disney World. It's not for me. Peter Pan it sort of broke the spell a little bit. Like I was like, oh, I get it now. Because, you know, it's the way it's designed is you're riding in a pirate ship. Right. And you're flying over London at one point. And, you know, obviously, you know, you are not, but your brain can't handle that.
So it
sees these little tiny houses, with little lights on, and it's just like, oh, wow. And that's where I got the magic. You know what I mean? I understood it at that point. I liked Peter Pan a great deal when I was a kid. So, you know, that sort of grabbed me as a ride. But otherwise, I had absolutely zero interest in going to Disney World. It's a Small World is very sweet, and mm-hmm. that got me. But no, I didn't have any interest in going to Disney World. My girlfriend, however, has always wanted to go to Disney World on the holidays. And so this year, being one of the first years that we could, we decided to do that. Also happened to coincide with them opening Galaxy's Edge, which is to call it, they call them all lands, right, in Disney World. There's like Tomorrowland, I think it's called, or I just called it Future Town because I couldn't remember the name of it.
Yeah, there's Tomorrowland, Adventureland.
So Galaxy's Edge is a land. It's in a different park. It's in the Hollywood Studios park, but it's its own little sort of thing. It's surrounded by Toy Story, which is an interesting kind of dichotomy, and then this sort of street that's set up to look like classic era Hollywood, right? And so it's its own little thing, but that undersells it a little bit because it is its own little thing, and it's entirely immersive. Completely. You know, do you want me just to sort of walk you through our day?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that the big selling point was that it really is like you're in the world of Star Wars. It's not Star Wars land.
Right.
It's you're in the world of, like, there's no,
exactly.
You're not going to see the logo Star Wars anywhere once you get inside this thing.
It's not, there aren't like Ewok themed carousels or like AT-AT rides. You know what I mean? It is, you are walking into Star Wars. the interesting thing about this also is that everything that's at Galaxy's Edge is considered canon, right?
Oh, good Lord.
Right. So not only is it immersive, but it is also a part of the greater expanded universe. So, you know, I'm sure that every word, you know, that comes out of the cast members, that's how they refer to their employees. They call them cast members. Mal's is not canon, right? But the basic sort of ideas that they put forward are canon, and they're actually supported. There's a book out called Galaxy's Edge Black Spire, which is the novel that explains the creation of Galaxy's Edge. So when we arrived, we got there early. They call it rope drop in Disney speak. So basically, you're there at the very beginning. They drop the rope and they let you come through. When we were there, they were under no illusions that anybody was there to see anything else other than Star Wars, because you know, they announce over the speakers that they're going to be taking you, you know, to a galaxy far, far away. And there are hundreds of you in this line, right? It's not a line. It's a mass of people. It looks like, you know, those images you see in movies all the time, especially in the 80s, of just dozens of people crossing a crosswalk in New York City.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Let's apply that times 30 or 40.
Okay.
And then double it. It was, that's how many people were there. And as soon as they, before they drop the rope, you hear music, and it's John Williams music. It's not the Star Wars theme song. It is brand new music. John Williams conducted or wrote for this park. And it's this crazy, like sort of Imperial March-esque thing. And they march you in mass with all these other hundreds of people to Galaxy's Edge. And it, like that right away, like right there, you know, okay, this is not, I'm not going to ride a Ferris wheel. Like this is not, you know, that kind of park. And you know, they march you through the street, and it takes quite a while to get you there. And then, but as you're coming around, you go under this bridge, and you just, you're there now. You're in Galaxy's Edge, and it slowly, the scenery around you slowly transforms to be something that you would recognize as being from a science fiction film, right? Like fairly quickly, they march you around this corner, and then they put you in line. And when you get in that line, you're staring at an X-wing fighter, like a full size, like life size X-wing fighter, sort of parked in a garage. and you keep moving ahead, and then eventually you come around the corner, and the Millennium frickin' Falcon is just like sitting right there. It's this, like, it's
what a piece of junk,
right? This hunk of junk. So the thing that's amazing about that is, since we got there early, we decided to just hop in line for the Millennium Falcon ride. So there's a ride there.
Right, that's Smuggler's Run, right? That's the name of that.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And at the time we were there, it was the only ride in the park.
Really?
Yeah, Rise of the Resistance opened the day we left.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that. And, you know, you'd think I'd be upset. I am not. It gives me a reason to go back, and that I'm
stoked for. Wow.
So you go in, you know, you get in line, and the thing is, you're standing in line for a while, but you're, you know, the scenery you're in is just so otherworldly and so, but at the same time recognizable as something from Star Wars, right? You're just seeing things all around you. There's droids everywhere. And if you're inclined to do this kind of thing, there's an app that you can download so that you can actually interact with the droids on your app as you're passing them. You can open doors that other people can't open if you have this app.
Wow.
You know, as you're standing in line, as you're walking around the park.
Are the droids like clearly actors in costumes? Like they're kind of humanoid droids, or do you have like little gonk droids running around? Or
yep.
Like
yep. There's, you know, like the little mouse droids.
Wow.
There are a couple of attractions that aren't rides. There's the sort of build your own lightsaber.
Right. Savvy's Workshop, right?
Workshop, yep. Yeah. And then there's like the droid repair shop. Those are both things that you can do. It's an additional fee, and you can build your own droid, and you can build your own lightsaber, which I did.
Right. I've seen the pictures of you building your lightsaber.
So when you're in line for the Millennium Falcon ride, as you get closer to the ride, you get more and more immersed in the story. There's sounds playing overhead, like a character's voice that you hear. He's like he works at this location where the Millennium Falcon is set, you know, is getting repaired. There's work being done, and you know, you hear them like fire up the engines on a ship, and then the ship backfires, and you can see like the engine core, like the blaster starting to heat up, like they turn red and then they sputter out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They have, just all these really just sort of immersive special effect, sound effect. I mean, you're hearing the sounds that you hear in the background of a Star Wars film. You know what I mean? Like the sounds you're familiar with, droids, you know, sort of making their little beep boop boop noises, and and like the sound of ships flying overhead. You know,
it sounds like there's actual spaceships flying above
yeah,
you.
Yeah, constantly. You know that swooshing noise that spiders make in particular. You can hear that happening overhead. Also, while this is going on, there are stormtroopers walking around while you're waiting in line for this ride. And the stormtroopers are hilarious. Like they must use some sort of voice changing device, because they all sound the same, right? And they talk to you when they come up to you, and they're like, "Hey, I got my eye on you." And you know, there was this one guy who had a T-shirt, and it had Chewbacca's bandolier across the T-shirt. And he's like, "We're looking for a guy that wears one of those." And he had this really long beard, and he looks at his beard. He's like, "You know, for somebody that's not a Wookiee, that ain't bad."
Oh, so they actually say kind of original thing. They're not scripted.
Mm. No, they interact.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, all right.
They talk, especially little kids. They interact with little kids a lot, so as to be less scary, you know, because they're faceless.
Don't worry, we can't hit anything. We're fine.
We're fine. But like, so the garage, the shipyard, I guess, that you're walking into, waiting to this ride, is run by Hondo Onaka, which is, you may not be familiar with that. I don't think you've really watched the you don't really watch the animated series or anything like
that. No, I have not seen.
Hondo is a roguish character. I think he started in Clone Wars, but he's been in Rebels, and he's at this ride, and the ride is his, his facility, and he's the one who kind of like is like, "All right, I need you guys to take this ship and go follow down this space train, and then you are going to grab the space train with grappling hooks, and you're going to back off, and then we're going to steal the payload off of it." Right?
Does he appear on a screen or something?
Yeah, well, he appears as an animatronic at one point. So Hondo, he tells you what you're going to do. You go and you stand in line. All this is happening, and then he's interacting, air quotes, with a disembodied voice that is like basically like, "Hey, I don't think this ship's ready to go." You know, like all kinds of just kind of stuff to immerse you in the hustle and bustle of this smuggler's workshop, basically.
Is it the same voice as the guy on the cartoon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I figured, you know, Disney must rap. Like, they get everybody in these, you know, like when they hire you to play a role, they're probably also like, "You're also going to have to do the theme park stuff too, and like the toys and like, you know, everything. We need you to do everything."
Yeah. I mean, I have to think. I mean, side note, you know, we were there and we were in the Magic Kingdom later, and Josh Gad, who, you know, the voice of Olaf,
right,
was walking through the park, and we're like, "Oh my God, it's Josh Gad." And then like later that day, he participated in the Frozen sing-along, which is so I'm sure that is one of those things that, I mean, you know, if you're a voice actor, any credit you can get's good, right? But this is going to keep paying for itself for years.
Mm-hmm.
So you get in line and you keep going through, and then they open up the doors and you step into the sort of lounge area, the chessboard of the Millennium Falcon. So you step in, and there's that table, that round table with the seat where Luke was learning to use his Skywalker, his lightsaber, and you know, where they played the crazy stop motion chess, and you know, you walk in there and they hand you tickets that tell you what position you're going to be. Now, this positions, I only care about the one that I got, which is left pilot. You get to go in and there's a left pilot, there's a right pilot. The left pilot moves the Millennium Falcon left and right. The right pilot moves the Millennium Falcon up and down. Janie, my girlfriend, was the right pilot.
Perfect.
Yeah, it worked out really well. And then there was a couple of people who were, you know, who were gunners. And then Jamie is not a Star Wars person. So when, you know, he says, you know, make the jump to light speed, she doesn't know what that means. And the button lights up and I lean over and I smack the button and like you take off into light speed, you know, the stars fly past you. I mean, you know, literally you're just sort of sitting in a rig with TV screens, right? But they're so good at it that it doesn't feel like you're sitting in a rig in the TV screens. I don't like video games. I am not a video game person at all. But being in the Millennium Falcon, piloting the Millennium Falcon, flying it, you know, left and right and under bridges and over into spires and, you know, all of these other things. It was so cool. It was so immersive. And it was like kind of like lifelong ambition realized in its, you know, in its own right.
Is the set like everything faux distressed? Like it looks like the Millennium Falcon, like it's beat up and stuff.
Yeah, it's funny that you should ask that. I expected it to look like a giant toy, right? Like I expected to get there and have it look like, okay, that's a piece that was molded from plastic. You know, these are just sort of shapes. They don't really do anything. But I'll be damned, the whole thing looked like it was real. Like it didn't look like it was made. Nothing there looked like it was made to be a set. Everything looked like it was made to be real. Like it wasn't pieces of stuff from a hardware store that had been spray painted. You know what I mean?
Nothing. Right. Right.
Not a bit was recognizable as something that's just floating around. I mean, even the toilets. Even the toilets were like weird. I don't know how to explain it, but they were where like the water just came out of pipes in the wall. The Millennium Falcon looked like the Millennium Falcon. It looked dirty and beaten up and like it had seen some shit. And you're walking through this whole place where they have it and it doesn't feel like you're standing in line. It feels like you're watching a movie happen from the inside. It's pretty amazing.
Now, do people wander around? Like, is there anyone else in the rest of the quote unquote Millennium Falcon before you get put into the cockpit? Or is it just sort of like, okay, that's your turn in the ship and there's nobody else in it while you guys are doing the actual smuggling run?
At one point, the line diverts into a couple of different directions. So by the time you get to like the place where you're going to get in line, if that makes sense, for the ride, when it comes to being almost your turn, you are separated from everybody else. But up until that point, yeah, you're in a collection of people.
Got it. Okay.
But then they sequester like 12 of you into a little room, and then 6 of you move forward, and then that same 6 moves into the cockpit of the
Moon. Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's pretty seamless the way they do it. I mean, we were in line for an hour and some change, which is another reason I don't like amusement parks typically, is you have to stand in line for a lot of it. But we didn't have – they have a fast pass, which sort of lets you not stand in line, but those weren't applicable for this ride, so we didn't have one. But even that being the case, they moved us through really, really quickly. The ride itself is not quick. Right. But they give you so much lead up. I mean, the ride itself is quick, but they give you so much to do in the lead up to it, like so many places for you to put your eyes and to listen, that the ride feels much longer than it really is. They really got this thing down. Disney does. Like they know how to put together an attraction.
So what exactly is the ride? Like what are you supposed to do that? And what can you do to affect the outcome?
Yeah, I'm not 100% convinced that you really do affect the outcome. I think everybody, you get a score. You do get a score, but I think pretty much everybody leaves with the same result. I mean, the crux of the game is that you are hijacking something. Horrible. I was so excited. I just didn't pay attention. I was like, okay, hijack it. Right. So like, you know, you're hijacking something. You're using like, you know, some sort of grappling device to pull a train car off the back. It's like a train heist. You're pulling a train car off the back of its other cars. And then somebody else rides in and steals the cargo, and then they put it – you meet up with that person that took the cargo, and then they put the cargo on your ship, and then you go away. Then you fly home as quickly as you can because you're being chased by, you know, the Empire or the First Order.
Okay.
This game – this Galaxy's Edge is set in, air quotes, current day, the contemporary films. So Rise of Skywalker hasn't yet happened by the time we get there, but because it is canon, right? The thought, according to everything that I've read online, is that after Rise of Skywalker, there will be an impact to this game, like to this world. They will change, pieces of it to reflect that. Now I don't know what that's going to look like, and I can't imagine it's too awful much. Because they have that whole Rise of the Resistance ride, which is an 18-minute long ride
or
attraction. I guess they're not really rides in the truest sense of the word, at least not only rides. There are a lot of other things. But so, you know, I don't know. They're not going to build an 18-minute long ride and then completely change it 3 weeks later because of the week. But maybe right. They are. Maybe they've planned for this. Like, I don't know. But yeah, so that was our first hour there. I got to pilot the Millennium Falcon. That was pretty cool.
So I've been hearing things about that, like someone can crash the ship or something. Now is that they really? How does that work?
Oh yeah, like, I smashed the right into like a spire, a stone spire. it's kind of like Mario Kart, right? Except Mario Kart, if you were or F-Zero or any of those pole position, any of those racing games where you're literally just sort of flying through space and you're piloting, you have a target, you have to acquire it, and then you need to leave. And that's what you're doing. So part of that does require some skill. I assume people who are better at video games than I am leave with more, with better score than I did, like, but the way they don't really call it a score, right? Because that would not be in universe. Because then
that's what I was about to ask. Like, do they break? They don't break the reality.
No,
making it that be a, you know, having a score or a game or something.
Right. So basically, the way it works is like Honda is going to give you money, right, for doing this. That's why you're doing it. And then every sort of shot you make, he gives you a little bit more. Every piece of damage you do to the Falcon, he gives you a little bit less. So they do it as like a, well, here's your tab, here's how much money you've made off of this event. And I'm certain if I were to do that for a living, I would be hungry, because I was not good at it. But I didn't expect to be. I didn't care. I was strapped into the Millennium Falcon, and I got to hit the jump to light speed.
Oh, I was about to ask. You literally see all the pinpricks, mm-hmm. and then they stretch out.
Yep.
Is there sound? There must be, right? Sound that comes in. Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you hear Hondo talking. He's kind of giving you direction. He's like, "Oh my God, fly left. You got to hit this. Oh, hit this person. You know, do this. There goes 12 credits, you know, like he's just like, you know, he's talking behind you. And at the end, he's like, well, you came back alive, so I guess you did okay. You know, like, it's just kind of pithy, you know, like giving you what for, you know. And if you're not good, I assume if you are good, he's like real happy and a rich man now. But up until that point, he's, you know, it's very transactional, his conversation mm-hmm. with you. It's very much about the business. But yeah, you hear the blasters in the distance, you know, when people are chasing you. There's one scene where a Star Destroyer just sort of appears in front of you, and you're like, like it feels like it's right above you, and you're like, oh my god. And like, of course, that's the point where Jamie, who doesn't really understand how this game is, you know, how it's to be played. I don't either. Just to make that very clear. She goes the wrong direction, starts flying up into the Star Destroyer. I'm like, no, down, down, down. Like, you know, and like,
they're here to help us. No, 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 they're not.
I'm like, you know, he Hondo is shouting left, right, up, down, you know, and then I'm shouting, and then she's shouting, and then the people behind us are like trying to shoot people because they have the guns. It's this absolutely just delightful chaos. It's incredible. I walked out of that with just the biggest grin on my face. It was insane.
How did Jamie like it?
Oh, she liked it a great deal. Yeah, she liked the whole experience. She was really into it. You know, they don't. It's not, you know, there's no gatekeeping. Right, they want everybody to enjoy it, so make it as fun as it can be, and they're not trying to exclude anybody, you know, in that respect.
Right, they can't. Yeah, you don't know what Splinters of the Mind's Eye is? Get out of here!
Exactly. Like, no, they're gonna come on. That. Right. Yeah, exactly. You're out of here.
Okay, so when it's over, like the guy's like saying, "Hey, the mission's over. You can get out of here." Like, the hand of Disney is not felt, as it were.
Not too awful much. I think when it's over, yeah, like he's like, well, thanks for trying, and you know, get out of here. You know, he doesn't give you like a fond farewell. Mm-hmm. But you know, you're leaving, and then he just sort of goes back to talking with the other disembodied, you know, the other voice that's around him. And you know, I was in line for an hour waiting to get on this ride, and the disembodied voice that's having the conversation, he's doing it over a comm, so he sort of sounds like, you know, Han Solo on, you know, mm-hmm. from A New Hope, talking over the comm. And he never repeats himself.
Hmm.
He doesn't say the same thing twice. It's not on a loop. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It is just a constant conversation between him. Now, I assume if I were to go there the next day at the same time, I would hear the same conversation. But I don't know that. They could have thousands of conversations.
Right. But while at least you're there, there's enough original stuff for you not to hear it over again.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez.
It was crazy. But yeah, you're leaving. You walk down a gangplank and you sort of get spat out into Black Spire Outpost is the name of the outpost where you're at Galaxy's Edge. And it's interesting because I think because for me, Star Wars was always kind of shiny, right? Like there's the Death Star was always shiny and clean and spare, and even just the special effects. I mean, you know, R2-D2, 3PO, lightsabers, they were all very like polished, even in 1970. Well, I didn't see it in 77, but in like 1979 when I saw it, it felt very polished because we'd never seen anything like it. So it felt very new, very cool. And then again, even more so with the prequels and, you know, plus a little now with the sequels, the subsequent sequels. When you go there, you do sort of get this, at least I did, I got this appreciation for the way the world is, you know, current state in universe, right? Like everybody's wearing kind of patchwork clothing. Things are cobbled together. I mean, this post is meant to be on the outpost before what they call wild space, basically the part of the galaxy that they haven't explored or they don't have dealings with. And this is right on the edge. It's a frontier town, as it were. And everything is just kind of like these people are just making do. You know what I mean? They've just figured it out how to live with very little resources. So there's a lot of reuse of things, like I say, patchwork clothing, a lot of things that were clearly something else that are now armor or tools. You know, there's a – one of the restaurants that you go to there is a big roaster, but the roaster is an old engine. So
okay. Oh, gotcha. Like, all right. Okay.
Just heating up, and there's a droid basically spinning rotisserie forgs and
like, well, it's kind of like Ray. I mean, the way Ray was a junker, that right. She's pulling pieces out of a Star Destroyer to sell it,
right? You know, exactly,
little bits and pieces.
So. Yeah, you're on the planet Batu, so that's where okay. this is set. And
do they ever mention like how these strangers are in the Millennium Falcon? Do they ever say like, "Hey, Chewbacca, where's you know like
yeah,
if it's in universe, where's Chewie? Where's Han?"
Chewie shows up and yells at Hondo. At some point, and you know, you can hear his voice in the background, and they're like, "Oh, Chewbacca's here to check on the Falcon," and it doesn't work, and then Chewbacca leaves, and then they're kind of like, "Oh, okay, he's gone. So now let's go take this Falcon and fly out." You know,
gotcha.
Like,
all
it's
right,
all okay. very roguish. Like there's nothing honorable about what you're doing here in the Falcon, except that the Resistance, I think, will pay for this material. So like
okay,
it's gotcha. To help the Resistance. And he even makes a joke like that. And he's like, "And if you don't make much money, hey, at least you're helping the Resistance, right?" you know, may the force be with you. So yeah, it really gives you this sort of view, me anyway. Other people probably have a different relationship to Star Wars, but for me, it gave me a new way to sort of appreciate the films, like to really sort of see, you know, Owen and Beru as kind of like hard scrabble, you know, Dust Bowl farmers, you know, like in a different way. Like I never mm-hmm. really gave it, I guess, that level or that thought from that angle. I was going to say not that level of thought, because I certainly have given Star Wars plenty of thought over the years. But.
All these stark black and white photographs by Dorothea Lange of
exactly.
Owen and Aunt Beru.
Exactly. Yeah. you know, it just gives you... You know, you realize in a way, I think maybe the movies don't make clear, at least didn't to me, how awful it is under the Empire. And now with the splintered galaxy, with the First Order and the Resistance having fallen apart, like it's just it's chaos and there's no resources there, you know, and it gives you a different level of appreciation, I think, or a different type of appreciation. For the actual films, like to the point where I was like, you know, maybe I'll go back and rewatch the prequels.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. So I'm still on high.
Yeah. I was like, would you bang your head on the way out? So are there gift shops in this area? I mean, like, is there?
Yeah.
I know that we have the lightsaber thing. We're going to get to that in a minute. But I mean, I imagine there's places where you can actually buy merch, right?
Gift shops are plenty. Yeah. There are.
Right. Of course.
There are stalls outside where you can go and buy things. It's interesting. There's one stall that it's selling like resistance kind of wear, like obviously t-shirts that say Resistance, and then but stuff that looks like legitimately costuming from the films, and like, you know, really just very intricate, very detailed things from the Resistance point of view. And when the stormtroopers come around, at least one time I saw a lady close the things on her, on the thing, on the stand. So she closed the shutters on the stand and like walked away.
Wow.
So there's a commitment to it, right? Like,
yeah, that's
a, you know, now it could be, I'm 100%, you know, okay to say that maybe that was just her lunch break or whatever, but it felt very intentional. Like, and because nobody made a big deal out of it, she just closed it up and walked away. And then the stormtroopers walk by and they're like, "Hey, what's going on over there?" You know? And they're chasing Chewbacca through the park.
Oh, wow.
While you're there. So like, I'm standing there looking at, like bags. And all of a sudden, Chewbacca is like wandering by, and he's got a couple of Resistance people with him. And then, like 2 or 3 minutes later, stormtroopers come by. And anybody seen an 8-foot-tall Wookiee? You know, like. So it's like, you know, there's stuff happening all around you. You know, even when you're just standing in line to buy spicy popcorn, there's stuff happening all around you that create the story, you know, for you.
And there's no labels on stuff, right? It's not like you can buy a Coca-Cola or whatever. There's no recognizable labels, or is that not?
Well, they actually have their own custom Coca-Colas that you can buy. Okay. You can buy Coke, Diet Coke, Coke Zero, and they are spherical bottles with like a almost like a ratchet looking thing on the top for the cap.
How much are those?
$6.
Okay, all right. That's not that bad, actually.
No, it, you know, I mean, for it being a souvenir, like, I don't drink any of that stuff, but Jamie was there, and she's like, I was like, I really want one of these, but I don't drink this stuff. And she's like, well, I drink it. So she bought one, and she drank it, and then I got to keep the bottle.
Right, sure, okay. And they know, I mean, you're a captive audience, so they could charge you anything, and right. you'd have to buy it. So, okay, that's not, right. all right, that's not that bad. All right.
But they do sell some, like, in-universe thing. There's blue milk.
Of course.
Yeah. There's also green milk. The blue milk is delicious. It is not milk. It's like a smoothie. Yeah, it's a plant-based smoothie that just happens to be blue. It's got, like, a little ice in it, so it's a little, like, crystally. It's really tasty. It isn't, like, overly sweet or anything. It's just kind of like a generic fruity flavor.
Okay. Oh, that sounds all right. That sounds cool. I mean, and so are the people that you're buying this stuff from, like, what are they dressed? Are they just dressed as sort of like rebel, and not rebel, but like, you know, like sort of Tatooine, like sort of shopkeepers
type? Yeah, yeah. Basically, they all have like this sort of Batuin look about them. They wear like baggy pants and vests and lots of pockets and you know, things. Hats, a lot of big hats. This is interesting. They do, they have a language. There's Batuin written all over the place, which, you know, obviously I can't read, but if you have the app, you can actually hold the app up and see what it says.
Wow.
Which I think is pretty cool. But they have a terminology that they use. Like, so in the morning, when you are there, they say bright suns. That's how they say good morning.
Okay.
And in the afternoon, they say rising moons. That's how they say good afternoon. And when you leave, they say until the spire. I don't really know what that means in an in-universe sense, but it's what they use. One of the things that was funny is we were, you know, there are people that take your photograph when you're there. And, you know, you stand in front of, in my case, I stood in front of the Millennium Falcon. She took our picture a few times, and then they have you turn around, and there's actually either a drone or a high zoom camera on the other side of the park that zooms in real close on you and then zooms out. So it's like a GIF basically that they give you, and it's literally just a picture of the whole park, and then it zooms in right on you. Which is pretty cool. But the lady was talking to us, and she was from the deep south, so she had a very deep southern accent. She was taking our picture, and then as we went to leave, she goes, "Till the spire, y'all," which I thought was really funny. I'm like, well, if all of this is canon, then that means that there is a deep south in the.
She's from the southern part of the galaxy.
From the southern.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
it was pretty great. It was a great little moment. She was laughing with us, and we were having a good time. And then she said that, and it made us both laugh pretty good. Till the spire, y'all.
Space truckers.
Yeah.
I know you got a lightsaber, but you went to Savvy's workshop.
Boy, did I. Holy cow.
Now, who is Savvy? I don't know who that is. Like I said, I'm not that familiar with this, some of the deeper corners of this stuff.
I'll be honest, I don't know who Savvy is. You don't actually meet Savvy in the course of the event. I should just say now, anybody that is listening to this needs to want this information because I'm going to spoil some stuff. I didn't want any of this information. It was all very available to me, but I refused to watch YouTube videos. I refused to read on it because I wanted to go into the experience blank. That being said, right now I'm going to take that opportunity away from someone.
All right, everybody. You've been warned, everybody.
So when you arrive, they basically – you go up. You tell them, hey, I'm scheduled. And they're like, are you here for your to pick up your scrap metal? Because you're not allowed to call it a lightsaber because lightsabers are banned by the First Order.
Ooh.
So you're there to pick up scrap metal. And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Wink.
Yeah. And so then they move you in true Disney fashion. They move you from one line to another line. And then over in that line, they ask you, you know, so when you're looking for scrap metal, we want to make sure that we're pointing you in the right direction. What of these items do you find, like, that you might be looking for? And the items are things, they're like they're not like actual items. It's like nature or power or balance or, you know, and you kind of pick a theme, right, for your scrap metal. I picked nature. And they give you a pin, which you get to keep. I think trading pins is like a really big deal at Disney World. So like, I think it's a tradable pin. Like I would imagine people would find it valuable. But they give you a really nice pin. It's like metal. Like you could wear it, like, you know, if you're like that Star Trek lady to jury duty or something. I mean, it's like a nice quasi jewelry piece. They give you a pin, and that pin is what indicates what type of scrap metal you're looking for. So then they let you into the shop, the workshop, and you walk in and there's nobody there and there's just a big table and you're just kind of standing around. And then a guy comes out who looks, he doesn't look like a Jedi, but he looks Jedi-esque, right? Well, for starters, he's like when I saw it, he was like a British guy. So, you know, right away you're like, oh, you're important. So he comes out and he starts talking about the gatherers, and the gatherers are followers of the Jedi faith, right? But they're not Jedi. But what they've done is they've gone around the galaxy and they collect parts, pieces of broken lightsabers, bits of technology that could be refurbished to make a lightsaber. That they're basically like going around and collecting, gathering all of this detritus left over from when the Jedi Order was at its peak, and stuff that they can sort of pass off as junk, but to people who know, clearly not junk. Right?
Right.
And the dude is telling you like the story of how to start a kyber crystal. I mean, how to start a lightsaber. And they talk about the kyber crystals. And he talks about how, you know, each different type of kyber crystal calls to a different type of person, and it affects what your lightsaber will look like. And he lists the types of kyber crystals, the colors that they have, and that's what determines, you know, what your saber looks like. And he's like, red, of course, known for the color of power and strength, and can you name a famous person who had a lightsaber of this color? You know, and mm-hmm. You know, he kind of interacts, 'cause there's kids there. So he gets them involved. But it's funny, I had like a legitimately just like hardcore I'm 12 again moment, because he's like, do we know what the most important part of a lightsaber is? And I just blurted out, I'm like, kyber crystal. And he's like, yes, that's right, kyber crystal. And
thank you, 45-year-old man.
Yes, thank you, 45-year-old man. But you know, what's interesting is they know who the market is, right? Like they're not trying to make you feel like this is for kids. Mm-hmm, there's nothing there that makes you feel weird as a 45-year-old guy to be standing around with a bunch of other people of all different ages building a toy. Do you know what I mean? Like
right.
Also the fact that you pay $200 to do it for the privilege, makes you think that, hey, that kid, you didn't earn that money. I did. But so he walks you through the description of what the kyber crystal does and who has had, you know, what color lightsaber, and gives you just a little bit of like saber lore. And while he's doing this, like, again, John Williams is just quietly manipulating you in the background, right? Like there's just this the rising music that they play, you know, when Luke is looking out over the deserts of Tatooine, you know, like you just like the hair on the back of your neck stands up a little bit, and you feel, wow, this is really cool. This is something kind of special. Like I'm genuinely doing something phenomenal, like amazing. I have to think for little kids, if that had existed in 1984, right?
Oh my God.
It would have been world altering for me as a kid.
Yeah.
So I have to think that some of these kids, I mean, kids are a little more aware, I guess, now than maybe I was when I was their age. Like, that, you know, like I knew that it was just a movie, but there was always like, you know, that little part of me is like, well, but what if, you know, what if
right.
Like a real thing, you know, there gotta be planets. It might as well be Ewoks. Why not? So, you know, little kids are a little more savvy, huh? Pun intended. Maybe than I was as a kid, but it's still, these kids were like hardcore into it. Like the little kids were real into it. Everybody was just like it was rapt attention listening to this real man tell a fictional story, you know, about the lightsabers and everything. And then, you know, then they switched to building it where all of these sort of Padawans, they aren't Padawans, but, you know, helpers come out and they present you with the pieces to assemble your lightsaber. And you can choose from different pieces, and they walk you through the process of building it. And then after, you know, and they do this to you, they each one of these helpers is there for each individual person. So I had my own helper, and the other 12 or 14 people that were in the room with me each had their own helper, and they're all talking to you at the same time. So everybody's talking. So you hear people saying blah, 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 the same thing. And you really have to listen to what your person is saying. And you take the parts and you put them together, you assemble them. They give you visual instruction as well. You assemble them. And then at the end, you have like, you have to like sort of spiritually awaken your lightsaber, right? Like they have a thing that they put it in, and he gives you more saber lore, and the John Williams music kicks into full friggin' gear. And I got to tell you, dude, I am holding in sobs at this point. That's how emotional they make it. Like, that's how connected to the film you feel, because like the whole time I'm thinking, I have been waiting 40 years for something like this, and I finally get to do it.
Do they make the sound, the swoosh sound?
Oh, yeah. So then they have the thing, and you put your lightsaber in this like compartment, and then it makes the lightsaber sound, and you see your saber blade start at the bottom and work its way up to the top.
Oh, wow.
A little door slides away, and you can take your saber and you pull it up, and it goes whoom when you pull it up, and when you swing it, it goes whoom whoom. And when it gets near other people's, it's like, you know, like it's bonkers. Like the effort they put into making it more than just a prop or more than just a toy that needs
right.
You know what I mean? Like, and the thing weighs like up. 3-4 pounds. It is heavy. It is solid metal.
Do you pay separate? Like, how does you don't just get this for being in the park, right? You have to pay a separate fee, I'm guessing.
You pay to do it. It's okay. $200 and some odd. You can pay more to get a little extra something. You can pay a little bit less and get a little less of something, I think. I don't really know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just talking about that. But I paid $200. To do it, you know, for the experience, and you do it in advance so that you get there.
Sure.
They have your name at Disney. They have these things called magic bands, which are basically, they look like a watch, but it's got like an RFID in it that more or less communicates back and forth with the computers at Disney, and so you sort of scan your magic band, and it knows that you're who you say you are, and then you go in and you do your.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest. It was such an emotional experience for me in a way, not in like a, oh yeah, I'm a Jedi now kind of way, but like in a, wow, this is pinnacle fandom. Like, you know, it felt to me very much like what it must feel like if you're a person that seeks after autographs from people. Right, like if you're looking for a very specific autograph, to finally get that autograph, right? That's I have to imagine that that's what that feels like, because it was just, but with John Williams scoring it, because like, I mean, he's very manipulative. Like, that music is very manipulative. It's there to serve a purpose, and for me, it did. like 100%. I was invested in the story. It was new, right? It was a new story. It wasn't just like, hey, come in and build a toy. It's Star Wars. It's fun. It was a whole new story that I was now a part of. And it had so many touchstones that are that have been a part of my life for my whole life, right? That it if you allow it, it can be a very emotional event. And I allowed it. Hmm. I was like, I'm all in for this.
Could you tell what the other kids and other people's reaction were? Were they having similar transcendent experiences?
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't really focused on them, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I was really – I mean, when I say that I was holding back sobs, I'm not exaggerating. Mm. I was really focused on not falling apart in front of my girlfriend and all these strangers. Like, I had tears running down my face. Like, there's a picture of me. You probably saw it on Facebook where I have, mm-hmm. like, one hand over my mouth and the other mm-hmm. hand holding the lightsaber. That was a real reaction. Like, I was like, I'm going to cry, so I should put my hand over my mouth so people don't see it. But at the same time, it was like, I am – like, it's just that, oh, my God. Like, it really was just that emotional for me.
Huh. All right. I mean, the lightsaber is one of the great – all-time movie inventions. I mean, it really is. I mean, just
I mean,
when Ben Kenobi says more elegant than a blaster, you're like, yeah, this thing is so badass, but yet so elegant because it's just this little beam of light that can cut through anything. I mean,
Unless it's Kylo Ren's, then he can't even cut through a stormtrooper, apparently.
Well, there's that one. But I mean, it's a really genius invention of George Lucas's.
It really is.
It just every – I had the – you know, the 70s one, which was an inflatable tube, for Pete's sakes, that was just colored, and there was a light inside of it. You bop people with it. I loved that thing. I was running around the house hitting things left and right, and that was just a thick piece of rubber and some plastic. So yeah. I can't imagine what it would be like to have one that looks like the actual – what you see in the movies.
Yeah, now imagine that aged up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, what's interesting is I had a very interesting response to it too, because, like, I left with it thinking, like, normally when I buy something out of a peak of fandom, right, I almost immediately regret it after. Right? Like, almost immediately. I'm almost like, ugh, where am I going to put this? Who cares about it? Like, how am I going to – I've gotten past that need to collect that I had as a young – I don't mean past it like as in it's a thing that you should go past. But for me,
right.
It's a thing that I'm not – it's not a part of my life anymore. Collecting isn't the thing I did. I do anymore. I have a handful of books. I have some art pieces. That's really not a handful. I have more than a handful, but a handful's a lie. I have a ton of books. But
why did I buy an Infinity Gauntlet?
Right. I'm not like, and that's the other thing. Like, if it was a thing that even looked like a thing that you could just buy at a store, even like a good store, like a comic book store or something, I wouldn't have had any interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not. It is unique to that park, and to an extent, it is unique to me, right? Because I built it.
Right. You're not just being handed it to, you know.
Right.
It's not somebody just get here. Here's your lightsaber.
Yeah, it wasn't like here's my money. Here's your lightsaber. You know, have a good day. Although you know, it is still commerce. It is still commercialism. But it's one of those things that I was so happy to own it when it was all is said and done. I thought to myself, this is like now a thing that is an artifact of one, a truly wonderful experience I had in particular, but also a wonderful vacation that I had with my girlfriend who I love dearly. You know, and so there's things tied into it now. So like immediately I think, how am I going to display this? Where am I going to display this? And like, I've recently taken up woodworking as a hobby. So like, I'm thinking about building a little lightsaber holder that I can mount on my wall. You know what I mean? And immediately I thought like ridiculous things. Like, I'm going to customize this lightsaber. It's not going to look like this 2 years from now. Like, I'm going to change it a little bit every year. Like, every time something happens, I'm going to notate it on my lightsaber. Like, now it's a thing that I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life. And it has no value intrinsically to anyone else. which in its own way makes it kind of more special to me. Like,
yeah,
I'm the only person that this thing matters to. You know what I mean? So it's
right, because you built it. You put it together yourself, sure.
Right, most people are going to look at it and be like, oh, it's a toy. I'm like, well, yes, you're right. But if you try to play with it, I'll break your legs.
It's a Jedi's weapon. How dare you? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Wow. You know, so it's one of those things where I just it was such a great experience. The way they present it in and of itself, well worth the for a Star Wars fan. And I should take this time to sort of point out the fact that I would consider myself a middling Star Wars fan, right? Like, I love the property. I've loved it since the first time I saw it in like 1979. I've always enjoyed it, but I'm not one of those people that has like an encyclopedic knowledge of the expanded universe.
Right, you didn't read every book when they came out. You know, no. We worked together at Borders, and it wasn't like you were like, "Ooh, the new Star Wars book is out."
Exactly, and like, I don't know all the names of the droids. Unlike you, I didn't have every single toy that was ever created for Star Wars. Right, like I am a middling fan of this property. I love the story. I love the world. I love the world building. I love some of the characters. I detest others. Darth Vader scares me still. I don't understand people who are like, Darth Vader's so cool. No, he's scary. Like, he frightens me. I remember walking into Return of the Jedi at the ripe old age of like 7 or 8, and first scene is he comes on screen and I start to walk away, and my mom's like, if you're not going to watch this movie, we're going to go see something else. And I'm like, no. You know, like, Darth Vader scared me. He's a bad guy. And that was sort of one of the things that was interesting, was Jamie was sort of flummoxed by how so much of the stuff there that's really cool is all for the bad guys. I'm like, yeah, the bad guys are kind of cool in Star Wars. They're still bad guys. So maybe we should ask ourselves if that's okay. But but they're the most dope looking. Like, let's be
honest. Oh, yeah. Oh, they got some serious style. No doubt about it.
For sure. So, you know, and if I had that response, I feel like somebody who is heavily invested in the universe to the degree that, say, perhaps they have a podcast about it, or do have an encyclopedic knowledge of all of the you know, extended universe things. You know, I read the Thrawn books. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, me too. Yep.
I liked those. I liked all of that stuff. When George Lucas said, yeah, none of that's relevant anymore, I was like, no, some of that stuff's too good for you to just throw away. And I'm really happy that as a collection of writers, they've decided that I was right, that some of that is too good to throw away. I think one of the things, I don't know if you watch, I know you do watch The Mandalorian.
I do.
They had a loaf cat in one of the more recent episodes. Just a little nothing, right? Like, but for somebody who knows what it is, it's cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it's there, but it indicates that there's other things that they haven't just tossed away. But even then, I'm not, you know, I just feel like it's one of those things that if you love Star Wars, you definitely should do this lightsaber experience if you can at all. It really does feel like a very special moment.
All right. So, I mean, overall, you really thought it was – I mean, again, I got these series of texts from you, and I could just tell you were just like, I've got to talk about this. And you were still there at the time. You were in the middle of the experience. But, I mean, so that's great. I mean, that's wonderful. So, overall, you felt like it was – it's worth the wait. It's worth the money. It's worth all the expense and travel to do it. It really was it delivered what you were hoping it would deliver.
It went so far past what I thought it was going to deliver that I immediately began planning my return visit.
Wow.
It's for us, you know, where we are, it's far away. It's just a 2.5 hour plane ride, but it is a plane ride, right? You can drive there, but who wants to do that? But you can, you know, if you can't fly there, then please drive there. You know, I really do think it's, and now they have the Rise of the Resistance, which, like I mentioned earlier, it's an 18-minute ride, right? And one of the things that there's a, I find the lack of Leia disturbing, right? Because to me, Leia is the patron saint of Star Wars. And Carrie Fisher extended that beyond that. So there isn't much Leia if you're looking for that, which I was. I was looking for, like, product that I could bring home for my housemate, Jen, and my best friend, Jen, who because she really likes Princess Leia, and she has a dog named Leia. So I was, like, looking for anything Leia that I could buy. And I noticed they didn't really have a lot, but then they also don't really have a lot of Leia. Just sort of her presence isn't particularly felt there. That may have changed with the rise of the Resistance, with that ride, that they may have changed that. I don't know. But I would have liked to have seen – I mean, they have the technology to make a hologram. I would have loved to have seen, you know, a hologram of Carrie Fisher or Leia. Even if it were just a wanted poster, you know what I mean?
That's a nice touch.
Some little nod. And maybe it was there and I missed it. I don't know. But I would have liked to have seen more of her. Her presence would have been nice. That was, I mentioned there was some low-hanging fruit that they didn't touch on, and that's some of it. There's just some things that you know, maybe it would have been cool if they had done some of that stuff, but that might be particular to me as well. So not that they. It feels very much when you're there like it's not done yet. Like there's more.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like there's no way they're going to not have some of these things. I mean, when you go into Savvy's workshop, it's next to what appears to be a defunct Jedi temple. And when you go into the Jedi temple, they have a lot of very high-end gifts that you can buy there. They have these Jedi holocrons that you can buy that are really beautiful. Also, they kind of look like the cube from Hellraiser. Happening there. But you know, they have these little things that you can buy that are really beautiful. All kinds of really cool gifts. But again, very little in the way of Leia stuff. And just like you know, just some other stuff like more Yoda. I always want more Yoda. He's, you know, one of my personal fictional heroes. You know, whenever they out, if you could, you know, have dinner with any person from history, who would it be? It would be Yoda.
I'm guessing it won't be too long before Baby Yoda is everywhere in that park.
Oh, I have to think so. I mean,
you know, they're just waiting.
Well, so yes, maybe, but also maybe not, because remember, the park is canon. It's a story. It's not just a place for you to go and spend money. All of those things exist there. Yes, certainly they want you to spend your money, right? But it is canon. It's a story. You're in a part of a story, and Baby Yoda happens 20 years prior to the events of this story that you're in. So, and you know, maybe Disney would be like, okay, we got to sell some Baby Yoda here.
Right. We're going to leave all these Republic credits on the table.
Right. But they also have a huge investment in not breaking the story for people who know.
Right, right.
Right. There are things where you look around. So apparently now they have drone X-Wing fighters, life-size X-Wing fighters that fly over the park at night.
Wow.
Yeah. That were built by Boeing.
Oh, God.
Right?
Wow.
So next stop, Disney buys Boeing.
Yeah.
And Disney owns Warfare. But that's, it's only a matter
probably,
of time.
Yeah. Yep. Probably.
It's only a matter of time, right? But so they have these drones that fly over. I didn't get a chance to see them, you know, unfortunately. Another reason to go back. But yeah, they have these drones that fly over at night. You know, they really do try to make it like you're somewhere else. There's a restaurant there called Oga's Cantina, and it's the only kind of, like, I was going to call it sit down, but you're not actually allowed to sit. It's like it's the only kind of, like, not, they call them quick service, but cafeteria style really is more accurate. It's the only kind of not cafeteria style like place in the park. So you go there, you go in, they tell you the rules, which is that you can only stay for 45 minutes and you have to stand where they put you. But you go in, and it is, you're in basically the Batuu version of Mos Eisley Cantina. Okay. There's a droid DJ playing music. They play the cantina music at some point. See, this is what I mean when I'm a middling fan. What's the name of the band?
I don't know the name of the, I'm blanking on the name of the band, actually.
God, we're horrible nerds. Yeah, that. Right? So they play that song, and the droid actually tells you that he's like a DJ. He's like a radio DJ. He's like, that's blah 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 by blah blah blah. And I feel so bad. If this weren't, 6 o'clock at night after a long day of work, I'd probably know it.
Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes.
Okay.
That's the name of the band. Everybody's screaming into their phones. Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes are the band from the cantina.
There we are. They're playing, they're not there, but the music is playing overhead at one point, and they announce the DJ droid announces it. And then he's like, and here's a song from way over and on Mustafar. And they play the, whatever that song is. And, and he doesn't, they don't repeat, he's there. A lot of the drinks they make use sort of culinary special effects. Like there's stuff that makes it bubble or stuff that makes it smoke. They're really big into boba in Disney. I don't know how familiar you are with boba, but it's little,
not at all.
They're little pearls. So like if you get bubble tea, it's like, what?
Oh, bubble tea. Oh, those are the things in bubble tea. Okay. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. The boba is really more like, if you go to like frozen yogurt places and they have like the little jewel caviar looking things that have fruit juice in them. That's really, really what like boba is, and they put it in everything in Disney World. They're just obsessed with it, but they use it to great effect at Oga's Cantina. There's a Muppet creature in a container that is floating in slime and a bunch of this boba, and then that boba floats down a tube into a jar, right? And that is what you're supposed to assume is the boba that you're consuming comes out of this slug Muppet thing. Right? Like, it's just these cool little touches, and they don't have much in the way of food, but they got a bunch of different cocktails, and they have these things called Batuu Bites, which are, it's basically just dehydrated vegetables.
Okay. Sure. Ooh.
I know it doesn't sound good, but they're very tasty.
Good.
Yeah, and they come with a nice little dip. You can eat them. Real good. Just like yummy stuff, but nothing crazy. Like, you're not going to sit down and dine there. They just kind of get you in, let you have the experience, and then get you the hell out of Dodge. I expect that'll change as the park ages. Right.
Not going to be
as special. Maybe they'll build another restaurant to take off some of the pressure on that one. But as of right now, you can only be there for 45 minutes. But it's fun. It's really cool. Warning to anybody that does go there, just be aware that it is a stand-up place. You can sit if you're with a family, but you have to have like a party of six or more to sit. And there's only four places, I think, where you can do it. But it is a stand-up place. If you have little kids and you think that's going to be your lunch, it's not going to be your lunch. There was a family of very upset people that shared a table with us. They thought they were going to a restaurant to have lunch. Their kids were hungry. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh boy.
Everybody was tired, and all they got was fancy bubbling beverages and
dried vegetables. Okay.
It wasn't a good scene for them, but so
I think they got to work on that. I think.
Jamie said that too. I think that they just need to publicize the fact that it's not a meal. It is a cantina.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, that's fantastic, Corey. I'm glad you had a good time. When I heard that they were doing this, I'm not that big on amusement parks. I've been to Disney World a couple of times. I liked it well enough, but I was like, that's not really enough for me to go down there by myself. But at the same time, piloting the Millennium Falcon would be pretty damn tempting. And now you're talking about the lightsaber. That does sound pretty damn boss. So, yeah.
And I didn't even get to build the droid. I did go
right.
To the
they have the whole droid
store,
thing.
Though.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a droid store, and you can go in, and R2-D2 is floating around. So I actually got to get down on my hands and knees and have my picture taken like I'm giving R2-D2 a hologram.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's really cool. Well, like I said, that's excellent. I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad Jamie had a good time. Yeah. And I imagine you're only, like, not that you could be any more, but you're probably just slightly more primed for Rise of Skywalker in 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am, I guess, controversially these days, I am a big fan of Rian Johnson's last effort.
Me too.
Loved it. And I can't wait to see. I hope they don't back away from too much of it. But yeah, going to the park, it felt like I was in the longest trailer ever. You know what I mean? Like, like I just like the whole time, the stuff you're seeing is about, oh, Rey is there, by the way, at the park. Not okay. The actress, but a very pretty, very thin British girl walks around. And she's meant to be Rey. You know, so it's incredible. Oh, if you don't mind, I did want to touch on one thing.
Sure, of course.
The thing that the park does that the movies haven't done and will never do is put real people in costumes, not beautiful, professionally beautiful people, right? Which is, let's be honest, from the beginning, that is who we've seen on screen, right?
We're sure.
Totally normal people that look just like normal everyday people that you know are there dressed up in their cast member uniforms or costumes. I don't really know what they call them, but you know, they look, they are there. They are a part of this immersive experience. So you get this whole and all different shapes, all different sizes, all different ethnicities, all different ability levels. You just get this real world. What was it? Was it Stan Lee that used to say he wanted to write about, he wanted reading Marvel Comics to be like looking out the window of your house or something like that. I'm butchering his quote, but you really do feel like this is the real world. Star Wars has been laid on top of it. Like, these are real people. And that's a thing that I don't think you really see in the movies, right? You don't see people that just look like people you know, but now you do.
Right.
And it to me, that added a layer of thing. And I think it bears mentioning because I think that played a big part in how much I enjoyed it, a much bigger part than I realized at the time.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. It's very cool.
It's immersive. That piece of it, that diversity piece of it, makes it that much more immersive. You feel like, you know, I was always, you know, to me, I mean, people who know me personally, and you know, maybe I've mentioned it on different podcasts. I've struggled with my weight over the years. I don't anymore. I don't struggle with it. It won. but to see, you know, you sort of always, if you try to envision yourself in one of these scenarios, you just always think, oh no, I would never be me. I wouldn't want to be the guy who drags everybody else down when they're running from, you know, the Empire or whatever. But when you're there, you know, you see people who look like you and you think, wow, that's cool. It's so much more welcoming than it was just as a film.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. That's great. That's just super that you had a great experience. I had heard a couple of bad things about the park and that they weren't ready for certain things. And
I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they're going to get up to speed and start, you know, they certainly have a long range goal for Star Wars. So that's really cool. I'm glad you had a great time. And I said, thank you so much for doing this. This is so exciting. You were so excited to do this. And I was just like, great. Well, thank God we have a Star Wars show that we can talk about this. So, and it's great to dispense this information, everybody. So thank you once again, my friend.
Sure. Absolutely. I was happy to do it. As you said, I was real excited. And to be honest with you, I didn't really talk to very many people about it at all because I wanted to sort of reserve my excitement for the podcast.
Ooh, all right, cool. All right, everybody, we've got exclusive material here. So yeah, and then if you're listening to this the day it comes out, Rise of Skywalker will be a scant 9 days away. Woo. So yeah, I am, you know, I am super excited to see how this all wraps up. I hope you bring your lightsaber, Corey.
I will not. It's $200 and it weighs 6 pounds.
Not letting it get damaged and get buttery with your, you know, your popcorn. And
if you'd
your
like to swing
lights
by my house prior to the film, I'll happily show it to you.
Absolutely. I think we're going to have to do that. So yeah, Corey and I will be there watching Rise of Skywalker together. It'll be a really good time. So everybody, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this little tour of Galaxy's Edge and Walt Disney World. If you've been there, leave a comment on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com, and let us know your experiences over at Galaxy Edge. And of course, if you want to support the network, go to Patreon, patreon.com/FWPodcasts. That's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I am sure there's going to be another episode of Give Me Those Star Wars hosted by Ryan or some contingent of the network to talk about the movie when it comes out. And like I said, in just 9 days, so I'm sure there'll be another episode coming soon. So, again, thanks, everybody, for listening. And until till then, may the Force be with you.
Till the Spire.
It's the new Star Wars lightsaber from Kenner. Inflation required, batteries not included. You can pretend you have powers when you switch on Kenner's Star Wars lightsaber.
Ready to feel the Force? Yeah! Switch on your Star Wars lightsabers, close your eyes, and go! I got it! Me too! Zach, you passed the test! The Force is with you!
The Star Wars lightsaber, new from Kenner. Balloons not included.